to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, great. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I have Jeff Livingston here from Generative Buzz, and really looking forward to the conversation. Jeff spent a lot of time with marketing and sales team and AI, and so I'm looking forward to what we talk about. But Jeff, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, Dean. Thank you so much for having me. It's always awesome to be on with another podcaster. We do have the craziest conversations, and especially in this AI space. You know, I've been in AI, I think, tangentially now for the better part of a decade, and I've been out on my own with my own company, Generative Buzz, now for, 4 years now, just really trying to help people implement this and organizations adopt AI, whether that's through training or figuring out their strategy. But yeah, it's been a wild ride, definitely from the machine learning analytics days to let's hallucinate a little bit with our favorite LLM, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think, like, you talk a lot about AI adoption. It's no longer about tools, and it's about leadership, workflow redesign, and organizational change. And, you know, it's so hard for a lot of people because they just want AI, you know, everyone to use it, but you really need to be thoughtful about it. But when you talk about cutting through the AI hype, like, what do you think the biggest AI myths executives and marketing leaders are still buying into right now?
Yeah, there's so much of it. And I did listen to your podcast a bit. I know you talk about it too, and you have your own feelings about the hype. I think there have just been some severe missteps. And I guess that maybe that's a marketing guy's perspective, right? Of course, we're picking. We love being marketed to when it's great, and we hate marketing when it's kind of a little bit shoddy. So I feel like with the tech companies in particular and the way that this has been mirrored out, we're going to replace jobs, and we see 90% of, let's say, marketing jobs disappearing, or 50% of workers will be displaced, that kind of logic, that really speaks well to a corporate board for a Fortune 500 company. That doesn't speak well to the rest of the population. And it was really, I think, traumatizing. And I also think that when you consider that the media is one of those areas where they already lose jobs a lot to digital communications and automation and content marketers, and the way everything's gone with journalism, the media is definitely picking up that narrative, and it's really hammered home the dangers of being automated out of a job. And I think that's really the number one thing I almost always have to deal with still, is that, hey, this isn't probably going to take your job. Or if it does, then that company is probably not going to do well in the future. The other one I think is, and you're probably seeing this too, I'd be curious to hear your take. I feel like most of these AI companies market a general capability and not really a specific outcome for companies. And so there's still a question of, like, what does this do for me? How's this actually going to make my life better? I was literally talking to an accountant the other day, like, that said to me, I know that this is impactful, I just don't understand how it's impactful for the way I do my reconciliation process, the way I have to interact with my CEO. I'm not really understanding what an LLM can do to benefit me. So that's a good example of it.
Yeah, I mean, right on about that. You listen to a couple of my podcasts recently, I'm just happy the narrative's changing, because it really is, as you said, it's traumatized the next generation of people coming in the workforce and the current workforce. And it serves nobody, because it's not true. And maybe that's the vision for the future, but So is the Jetsons, you know? And so it doesn't serve anybody. And I mean, I love AI, but I don't like AI with the AI hype because it makes people make decisions that down the road they'll realize they have to reverse. And but at the same time, yeah, it can help everybody. And it's a tool to be used with people. And as people innovate on top of the LLMs, it's going to help more and more people, but it's not going to replace people. And it could could reduce some headcount, but not the way everyone's talking about it.
No, I think it's really funny too. Like my biggest AI troll in my life is my 15-year-old. And this whole generation coming into the workforce just has a very negative view of AI, and it's because of these headlines, I think. But every day this kid gets in my face about some bad AI story that's out there. And I do feel like, and this is just the marketer speaking, that it may be that the horses jumped, it's out, it's too late, and I don't know if they're going to be able to get this narrative back. We may be looking at, as these things do tend to happen, a change in movement name, from big data, for example, into analytics, into AI. As we've progressed through this chain, we may be looking at a different nomenclature. It remains to be seen. I do think that what you said, though, about this being highly useful without the stories is really where people need to focus. And the headache thing in particular in that comment was on point. I mean, if find me a business area where there isn't something that drives people crazy that's rote and painful, and the customers aren't happy about it either, you're probably not really in business if you can't see something like that.
So like along these lines, like a lot of companies are experimenting with ChatGPT, but truly transforming workflows. Like what's the difference between AI experimentation and real AI adoption?
The area where I'm seeing a lot of this right now for smaller and medium businesses in particular is with Cowork and Claude. And I do think that, I know that OpenAI has its competing product and so does Perplexity. And I can't imagine that Google is going to be sitting on the sideline for very long without its own unique take on it. Probably looking at the next version of Notebook LM being very similar to these tools. But the thing that Cowork got right, and when I analyze it, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this, is when I look at connectors and plugins and skills, what they've really done is they've provided the context, the data into the system, and then the prompting through the various plugins and the skills to get the right result, or at least to prompt the user to provide enough information so it can get the right result. And so that's become a lot easier to use and to integrate into various teams. And I think that's really the trick. When you have a workflow process that's suddenly automatable, and then you can just save whatever your work is as a skill so that you can repeat it, that makes life easier. Suddenly people aren't having to create dramatic use cases or ideate for weeks on end and run pilots to make sure whether something works. It's just there.
No, 100%. And I think everyone building software on top of the LLM is doing exactly that, how to get more context, have more accurate answers, and connect to data that only your company may have as a proprietary competitive advantage, and feeding that and keeping it private and not is will add to the competitive advantage of leveraging AI with all these ways of doing it that you just mentioned. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Did you see the Databricks announcement about the customer data cloud, the customer cloud?
No.
So this is really interesting to me, only in the sense that I see one of the biggest unification challenges with all the data. And of course, this is the Holy Grail, right? Everybody's always talking about getting all the data in one usable place. But having all that customer data from your various sources, your customer service team, the Zendesk, if you would, the sales team, the marketing team, all the stuff that's happening with communications and social and the website, all in one place so that you could basically have it extrapolated against with analytics. And then your, of course, your LLM sourcing that analytics and some of the data that's unmined in there. I just thought that, wow, we're really moving very quickly into where this is going to be hyper powerful. And to me, that's really about that customer journey. Because I think one thing that I still see a lot of is siloization and the way
Oh,
that
yeah.
people are approaching this.
Huge problem.
Yeah. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, I just feel like
Yeah,
people are.
our team's actually working on what you just said because most mid-market companies, they can't afford an advanced data team. And if they can afford a data team, they may not be at the highest level of skill that you need them. And so when you're really wanting to understand what's happening in your business, you need data from all your digital channels, your marketing, SaaS systems you're using, your ERP, and all these different locations in order to answer like customer acquisition cost or answer the kind of things you want. And so it's critical that whole data architecture for both performance and feeding the right data, not to confuse the LLMs, and putting additional context layers on top of it, like you talked about, like skills and feeding it the information on the specific use case. So you don't want to feed it just someone's asking something about a sales question or a marketing question. You don't want to feed it too much data because it won't
It'll
give it
go
an
off the
accurate
rails, right?
answer. And so, yeah, these are things we work about. So it's right on. Like that's the critical part is like the data model, the context layer, and getting that right, stitching it together, which is hard for a lot of mid-market companies. So we're building a lot of that.
Yeah, I think it's hard for a lot of large companies too,
It
right?
is hard. It's even more complex, but they at least have like teams to put against it. But they have
Yes.
so much data from 30 years ago. And like you go to the enterprise, it's like unbelievable how much technology they have from decades ago and how much it's so complex. It's just there's so much, and that just creates complexity. Like the IBM new IBM commercial
Oh,
sounds
the
sweet, but not true. It's
mainframe.
just not true. We leave the data where it is. That's just not true. Like you're not gonna be able to do that, have performance and give the AI the right context in a narrow way to make, but it's good marketing, their new
That's a good
commercial.
marketing tool. Yeah, I feel like in the large company side, like what I see is more often than not, IT is the barrier, right? You can't touch the data. No. No,
Yeah.
no, 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 no. Like their whole job is. And rightly so, having been through a fair amount of cybersecurity challenges in the past, between working at the United States Postal Service and the Chief Information Security Office, and another company where we had a really bad breach. I understand where they're coming from. I don't mean
Yeah.
to demean that, but it's also kind of like this really hard tension right now between cybersecurity and data access, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
no doubt. I mean, so not really switching topics a little bit, but like where do you see the biggest near-term opportunity for AI in sales and marketing and with communication teams? You know, kind of along what we're talking about, but this is an area that you think a lot about.
Yeah, I definitely, going back to that customer journey, I think this unification grail, if you would, the holy grail of customer unification, that's really it. Because when you see that journey unified, I think what's possible, not necessarily what's going to happen, but what's possible for an entity is that they can really start identifying areas where they should be doing more work and also areas where they're maybe a little bit over-focused. And so what I mean by that is I think particularly with social media, let's use that as an example, because it's always fun to beat up on Instagram. let's say you're like the typical company and you have five different social properties. It's likely that your customers aren't in all those places unless you're a consumer company, right? So, and a very consumer goods oriented company. Do you have to be in all those places? Why are we creating content here? Why are we investing so much time? Why are we going through this rote task of manually posting and getting in there? Or if we're using a platform, why are we continuing our third and fourth and fifth place networks? What kind of pull through are we getting? What kind of results are happening? What kind of word of mouth are we getting? If you can't tie that to your customer data platform in some way, if you can't see that, then you have a perfect justification to continue doing it. However, when you do see that data and you do see user profiles connected with customers, or you don't, then suddenly you can say, well, what happens if we turn this off for a month?
Yeah.
Right? And if it's bad, then okay, we'll turn it back on. No problem. Right? We'll pay for the advertising to get it ramped back up and get that engagement. But If not, let's let it go.
So you see a lot of that then? You see people like really investing time and money in channels that they probably is not their ICP and they're but they're not like understanding that.
Totally, because they don't have the full picture. And there is a dormant kind of logic. We have to be in places. We have to be seen here. Or the CEO said that we need to have a LinkedIn presence. His friends tell him about LinkedIn all the time, or Substack's the current hot one, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing too, with that is you can identify gaps. So locally, there's a banking association here in Washington, D.C. that did map its member journey, and they saw that, I think it was the American Banking Association, when they hit the fourth year, members dropped. But if they kept the member through that fourth year, they were members for life more often than not. Very rarely did they lose them. So what they decided to do after looking at that analytics cycle and their it's called an AMS, Association Management System, which is basically Salesforce with a different front end on it. And literally, they usually are Salesforce engines. Anyway, their Salesforce implementation shows that drop at 4 years with the analytics. Great, let's create a campaign for that fourth year. Let's save those members and then keep these members for life, right? And they
Yep.
literally saw that their drop rate reduced by more than half as a result of that. Again, customer journey.
Yeah, I think that's where people could design some really powerful systems where, when you do have the data over a lifespan, like you talk about the customer journey, how do they find about us? What do they do when they're with us? And then if we're having attrition, but like AI, like the hardest part about analytics is the why. Like you always know what's happening,
Right.
but it's the hardest part is why. Like why, which is not always easy because there's a lot of noise. But AI can help there, not just automatically. I mean, you kind of need to keep building the context and some of your own intelligence into how you make decisions. And when you do that, it could help a lot of your organization understand more of the why when you're getting all the analytics and signals coming in, which is the hardest part about being data driven is why? You know, it's not easy.
That's the human's job too, right? Like, I think we should be happy that it's hard. We have to go in there and figure that out. Why do people always seem to drop off after they register for a webinar or download a white paper? Or why do we always seem to lose 30% of our customers after 2 months?
Yeah.
What's happening that they feel that this is just not a good enough experience that they decide to unsubscribe?
Yep.
Or is that just the way this model works? Like, if you're a streamer, right? A Netflix, Paramount. Yeah, they basically every time they have the right show on, they join us again.
Yeah.
World
Yeah.
Cup, I'm on.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Right.
So you work with a lot of Fortune 500 brands and major associations. Like what do you see separates organizations that successfully adopt AI from those that kind of stall out?
It's discipline. And when I say discipline, it's really about what are the best use cases and how does this apply to our mission, right? So they not only just look at AI, they look at how it's going to support what they're trying to achieve from a strategic revenue or a strategic membership standpoint. If I do work with some nonprofits as well and those associations, beyond the members, sometimes it's an advocacy goal. You know, are we affecting change? But if the AI can't help that in some way, it may be small, right? But if it's not contributing to it, it shouldn't be done. And
Yeah,
so,
and how do you get to that point? Because like everyone wants to like drive fast to do AI, and like how do you help them? Like how do you help them think through the process of effectively deploying resources to leverage AI to improve their business?
yeah. I mean, to me, there's a few vectors you look at, and this isn't anything different than any normal IT justification process, by the way. So I don't think it's like unique secret sauce, but you know, what is the mission value, right? Look at some different components of that. How does it help us achieve mission? How does it make the goal of the year achievable? For example, sales or whatever it might be, revenue. But usually a mission is a little bit stronger than that. Like, we want to become number two in the sector, wherever it might be. Two, technology. Is it feasible? Right. And this gets back to the data thing. Like, there's so many people that want to go 0 to 60 with AI, and they're just not ready yet. They don't have their data system cleaned up. They just buy Claude Cowork and they get the Enterprise Edition, and nothing is plugged in, right? They don't take the time to integrate, let's say, Microsoft 365 or whatever it might be, so that people can extrapolate information across their systems. And so without that being in place, you're basically giving somebody a very expensive chatbot to communicate with, which is great, maybe, if they're that person that uses it well, which we've now learned is like what, one fifth of the market? Yeah.
Well,
So
there's a huge problem too that one is like it gives you Claude and ChatGPT give you instant gratification in what you're doing, but it's hard to scale it, share it across a team. It's hard to like scale it in terms of even performance if you're, dealing a lot of data and data security. And so it's like what's crazy is that it gives the person so much positivity and happiness right away from using it, but to scale it out is a whole nother story. And ensuring the right data gets in there and you don't have data leakage and ensuring you have performance. And so it's you have to be really careful about all that.
yeah, I mean, to your point exactly, I think the third area you have to look at is whether the organizational culture will reject it. I mean, that's the another thing. Let's talk sales development reps. Do you think these guys really want
I want
AI?
to protect their data.
No, they want to protect their data. They want to be the ones that are out there getting the information about the clients, because frankly, their job is the one where I see in the sales department or the sales and marketing department is most at risk. It could be a lot of their work can be automated simply by scraping the web with deep research. I mean, I hate saying that, but I mean, you can literally set up skills to replace much of what an SDR does. So then their job really becomes outreach, and a lot of these guys don't like doing that. And you know, we see this. We've seen the slop spam, as opposed to the one-on-one contacts and the hard relationship development work, which only a human can do.
Oh
Only a
my.
human could do that kind of work. And so I think SDRs in particular is a great example of like a cultural role that may reject it, and they may not have a choice. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's not just SDRs, but AEs and inside sales reps. I mean, AI can do a lot of the busy work that they probably live 90% of their time doing, when the real value for all of us is them closing deals, understanding problems, solving problems, talking to the customer, creating new relationships across the departments, which only a few handful do it, and then those are your A plus salespeople, but the rest of your workforce is doing the busy work. Which
And
AI can do,
right, and with more accuracy usually, which
and
is
better accuracy.
yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then I think the last one is just basically cost and feasibility and whether it just works, you know, from a hard metric standpoint, you know. But if you look at it from that point of view, you can really kind of create a quadrant where you know, classic Gartner quadrant where the top right, here are the use cases that matter. Are there any foundational ones we have to do first? And it becomes pretty straightforward.
So you talk about the CEO needs to drive adoption across the enterprise and
Oh,
not just
100%.
delegate it. So why is a CEO involvement so critical?
Because what we just talked about, those silos, man. I mean, really, we know that IT doesn't want you playing with data and throwing stuff out on the internet. So there's we have a lot of instances. I have seen a lot of examples where the CIO will shut down AI, and they're doing it from the cybersecurity perspective. And again, I am not demeaning that approach, but just like any good crisis communications team will sometimes tell the lawyers to leave the room. Sometimes you need to tell the IT guys that's good. We appreciate that. The risk is something we have to incur if we're going to be successful. And I do think that's part of it. Again, operations is another example of that, you know, or where we just want to go by cost. Are we making good financial decisions? Are we making more money? Are we making Are people more productive? What is the use rate of a computer for somebody that has an AI monitoring their actual work computer, that kind of thing? If we're not at 92%, then they should be fired. I mean, that's a crazy example. And I haven't seen that one, but I have seen where operations solely focuses on efficiency and costing. And sometimes that's not what you need. Sometimes you need to focus on innovation or relationship development. So the CEO has to sit there and work between the parties, you know, the chief commercial officer, the COO, and usually the tech function, whether it's CTO or CIO, they need to work together and they need to have cross ownership. So that's the CEO's job more than anything, I think.
So I'm curious, like, there's so much content out there, you don't always know what to believe because people create surveys and it seems like it's unbiased and that it's like, okay, if you survey enough people in the right sector, that is what people are thinking. But like, but we know those are marketing projects. And sure. Do you believe that, we still haven't been able to show the ROI of AI? Like,
no, that's bullshit.
I think that's BS too. I'm just curious.
Sorry, I cursed on your podcast, Steve.
That's okay. I think it's BS too. I just wanted to see. I wanted to see if you had the same point of view. Like, really? I talk to people every day and they're like, they're individually getting productivity. And if you have a serious implementation, like what we talked about, connecting to the right data to help, like, different teams get work done, amazing ROI.
Yeah. Now that MIT study in particular, the one with the 95% number, the if you look at the methodology and you read into the study, and I did, it's not good. First of all, it was subjective interviews. It was 2 years ago now, I think.
They're and still citing it though, like in recent articles, not just MIT survey, but just other surveys. They're making blatant statements. And yeah, so you think it's BS. Me too. But I just,
it's so juicy, right? I mean, like, this gets back to that whole hype conversation. It's such a juicy nugget to like sink your teeth into and just say, this is bunk. But the reality is if it was bunk, it already have gone the way of the metaverse. This is for real, no doubt. And
so how about, like, what does a practical AI roadmap look like for a mid-market company that, you know, wants measurable productivity and, you know, wants to gain it in like a quarter or 30 day time frame?
Yeah, I think one is, we have already talked a lot about it, is they're working in addition to what everybody's working on, which is getting the LLM working across their teams and sharing skills and workflows and automating those processes. You can call those agents if you want to call them agents. I don't know if we're going to be calling them agents in 2 years. It's just the word of du jour. But basically, these automations across teams, right? So that's layer one. Layer two is unifying data across these different departments and having them share information. CEO, make it happen, right? Sit on the CTO, open the gates. Let's get this done safely. Let's do it smart, but everybody needs to work together. And then when you have that customer journey, I think then you really start to see some dramatic movement. I think it does open the door for innovation. It does show there are opportunities out there where our actual stakeholders are telling us where we need to move. We're seeing that our competition is not addressing these opportunities yet, and this is our chance now. And I think that's where it's at.
Yeah, and I would add to that companies should realize that you don't have to always use the big models because token cost is getting very, very substantial and costly.
Yes.
But the other thing is you can use some of these smaller models or that can sit on your own servers or locally, so you protect your IP. And like the real competitive advantage you can get is if there's a process or decision process or the way you make decisions is unique to you and you can build the AI to know that, but keeping it proprietary, like that's a moat. That's competitive advantage.
That's right.
But now you're automating it, and then you could keep working on it to learn and even get better to improve your process. Like, those are strategic things companies should be thinking about.
One of the best customer stories, and I'd be curious to figure out how they came about their strategy and their decision making, was Delta Airlines. Did you see this story about how they're making all their money on premium air tickets right now? They're actually losing coach class seats to these.
Oh yeah, I read about. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, right. Like, so they're making more money now, even though they may have less passengers because they focus on the right audience. They're bringing back that glory day of airline travel. Hey, you want a cheap seat? Go on Spirit. See,
Yeah.
I guess Spirit's gone, but Frontier, wherever, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was a really fascinating story. Somewhere they figured out that they could build and create a larger customer base for premium dollars by building a better experience. And that's
Yeah.
innovation, right? And understanding what informed that data set is probably the secret sauce we're all looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what about like, yeah, employees are overwhelmed or they're afraid of AI? Like, how should leaders tell, what should leaders tell their teams or to make them not afraid or, be empowered?
Yeah, I think it's really the ones that feel that way are the ones not using it well yet. And I think it's really about investing in them. Look, we trust you to have better judgment than this tool. We need you to run this tool. You are running this tool. So, but we need also to have you stop researching contacts on the internet. We need you to be more customer facing. We need you to verify the data, whatever the role might be. Again, we're using that SDR example. And you're so good at it, right? So just keep talking to people, keep making sure this thing is going the right way. Show them how to use the tool. Show them how to use it well. Show them how to make themselves better for it. And then give them a little bump for doing it right. I mean, like, there's nothing that says we want you to stay more than a little raise,
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because I sort of live in a bubble because I'm around all these tech people and all these advanced people building stuff. And so like when say people are afraid or not using it, I'm like, yeah, I personally don't get to see
I
that.
don't
And
get
then
it
I was
either.
in this meeting the other day with like these guys who like sold their company, still had pretty good sized companies, and I was presenting something and they're like, oh, you said I, but you used AI to do that. You just said I. I'm like, I use AI for everything. What do you mean? It's just part of it. And so, I think there is sections of the market that are just at different learning stages. And but what's critical is, not to believe the headlines, or you don't need to be fearful if you're using it because you know its capability, which I think is so important, and everyone should use it. And
Right.
but yeah, there's all these different stages of people are going through, like the customer journey you're talking about on AI, but like everyone just needs to use it.
Yeah. I mean, creatives are another one, right? They're another one that just fight this tooth and nail. Like, I don't want this writing copy. I don't want this doing this. It sounds awful. It's slop. Everything's slop, right? Anything that AI creates is slop. And to me, again, I just feel like that's a really backwards way of approaching it. Maybe it
Yeah.
doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right to me usually as well, by the way. I tend to draft almost everything I do on my own, but then I use AI to
Improve
kick
it.
the teeth out of it, right? I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
because I will guarantee you my logic is about 80% of where it could be for it to be a great article, right? I want it to be great. I don't want it to be
Yeah.
good. And so I feel like each of these people needs to look at what their workflow is and how this thing can fit in. I mean, I look at marketing departments. Are you telling me you're going to write all eight emails in this sequence for these different ICP targets?
Yeah, it
Or
makes
are
no
you just
sense.
going to create the message and have the AI do it for you?
Right. I think that's important. Like, I had a question that I wrote down to ask you, which sort of along these lines. It's like how do you balance AI generated speed, scale, but brand voice, quality, creativity? I know the answer, but I think it's important everyone hears that because like the objection is it's going to be like everyone else's copy, or how do I have our competitive advantage and all that? Like, how would you answer that question?
I mean, I think you still own your strategy. And if you're a marketing, sales, or communicator, whatever that communication might be out, like, because there are different types, right? Proposals all the way down to email marketing. You own your message. You own your strategy. You understand the customer better. Now, you can help your AI understand the nuances of that over time, I think. And you can build that better prompt with it. You can build that better skill. But it's still never going to get all the way there. You have to own that original message. You have to own the way it drafts it and clean up what it does afterwards. I just think that it's that original creative thinking or original thought that really drives everything.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, AI is getting better and better, but what you just said is how you have like unique and better output is you start it off and then you collaborate with the AI to improve the outcome of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I just did a book, Dean, and it's called Now It's Gone. It's my fourth one. And I don't talk about it a lot. I've been through enough of these business books where for me it's a nice tool. I hope it helps people, but I wanted it to be really good this time. And so I used a developmental editor for it, and the developmental editor was Claude. And it was I actually came up with a superior book compared to any of my other business books, in my opinion. I wrote everything. It helped me put it together. It got to a great point. I read it side by side with it. I didn't let it take my text into a weird place. I didn't really use much of the text at all that it provided. It was almost all of it mine. But I do think that the critique that it provided was much better than I've got from humans. And then it got to a point where I needed to have a human read it and have a real copy editor go through it. And so the combination of machine editing versus human editing together provided what I feel like is a very good product. So.
Yeah, and to add on to your point is that the AI learns you and your style and then will be complimentary and encourage that and continue to do that when like sometimes you don't want that or need that. You need to take a right turn. So sometimes you want to turn off memory and give it a really fair critique because it's like unbelievable. Like the AI knows me and it always is like thinking the way I'm thinking. And then I've learned to like, okay, just turn it off. And then you get a whole new perspective.
Right. And also, how do you evolve, right? Like, I'm sure you're continuing to, you seem like a lifelong learner. And I know I like to think that I am as well. And so my thinking changes. And sometimes I have to throw out those skills sometimes and just rebuild. Yeah.
And that also goes to the fact of why companies, people, how they interact with the AI can have a unique outcome, good or bad. And so you have to realize that how to either leverage it or break it when it's doing not the output you want. Like
Yeah.
both cases are viable.
Yeah.
So you work with associations too, and you've written, spoke about AI for associations. Like why are associations particularly interested in the market for AI transformation?
Boy, they really need it. I will tell you, at least I know that there are two cities where associations seem to pull. One is Chicago, and the other is here in Washington, D.C. And the ones in Washington shockingly act like pseudo government organizations, and they need to be broken a little bit. And what I mean by that is, if you consider yourself a member, are you a member of any societies or associations?
I'm trying to think. I'm like more in, I've been like a Vistage member for a long time, but that's not what you're talking about. I'm in like Tiger 21 now, but you're talking about like yeah, I'm not an association of anything.
Okay. All right, so I'm gonna make fun of the United States Track and Field Association because I'm a member of that, and what can I say? I just
You're
I
a
love
runner.
coaching, but gosh, it's sometimes they have all these different revenue streams from their races to their coaching programs, and they market each of them at you separately and individually, and I could tell they're each different departments, and I never feel like I'm getting talked to by the same entity, right?
Yeah, that's not good.
This is very normal for associations. They got their trade show group. They've got their advocacy group. They've got maybe if they're technology orientation or medical orientation, they have clinical standards or technology standards, on and on and on and on. They have all these different arms and they basically act like little mini businesses with government procedures around them to protect them. And they fight inside. And they're usually about 60, 70 people and they just don't share information very well at all. It's
But
very
is that like a lack of CEO leadership?
totally, but it's on top of it. You have to remember, usually, so with a trade association in particular, usually the CEO or the executive director is somebody that's well known in the industry that was a board member that this is their retirement job sailing out.
Yeah, so they're not 100%. Yeah, they don't have the energy to like pull all these different people together.
Yeah, they're a face that you could trot out into a Congress meeting or
Yeah, I get it.
somebody.
So that's kind of like that why associations kind of have some of this because of smart people, professionals, but yet like, yeah, they're maybe at a different point in their career. There's yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Dean at the FTC, let's go golfing at Andrews Air Force Base. That kind of thing. And it's, I mean, look, they fulfill a role, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, they can really benefit from AI helping them to streamline their experiences and doing a better job for their members. And frankly, they have a, I think they have what I would call a mitzvah or a kind of a lightning moment, a God moment where they have to serve their sector, right? Help their sector get into this AI era without
Yeah.
damaging themselves. Like, look at the Recording Industry Association of America, right? I mean, they're so anti-AI in so many ways. Like, are they really doing their members a service? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, that's my point of view. Like, yeah, I'm biased because
Yeah, you and I
AI
both
should,
are, right?
yeah, AI should, everyone should figure out how to leverage AI. Like, it will just help them.
Well, in the another one of that in that like kind of guild mode is like the Screen Actors Guild, like can't use AI in any movie. They are using AI, all right? They've been using it for 30 years. It's called computer generated graphics, okay? I mean,
Yeah.
CGI has been around forever. We've been using AI for a long time. It's just a different algorithm. Sorry, let's get over this. Let's move on. I mean, I think what you really need to do is get into the licensing of actors' voices and images and making sure that they're protected in that way. If you can do that, I think everybody's golden.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like I had just kind of read a judge's kind of brief to these attorneys, and the last paragraph was like, you can use AI and but you are 100% responsible for the outcome of everything. Don't think that you're not responsible. Yeah, I was just thinking, anyway, I was just thinking about creative people and making movies, but like you have to leverage AI, but like yeah, you're the director, you're the creative, you're the one that's going to mold and shape the outcome and own the outcome still, and then you'll get rewarded with it if you do a good job, But why go the hard path of just doing it the old way? Why not do it with the AI? But 100%, you're still responsible for the outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it's your vision. Make it happen. Like, this is a
Yeah.
great tool to help you make that happen. Why wouldn't you
Yeah.
use it?
Yeah, no doubt. So how can you help companies think like strategically over the next couple of years to leverage AI? Like a lot of people might just take AI and put it on their current processes, but
Right.
like what kind of like advice do you have strategically how people should be, rethinking what they can do?
Yeah, I think one great way to look at it is what's that thing we want to do that is just too expensive for us to do? You know what I mean? Basically, that IT implementation or that kind of tool enablement where we wanted to provide a customer experience that we can't, or some sort of a streamlining that we just could not do because it's too expensive. I would unleash AI on that. Like,
Yeah.
how can AI help us get that done for quarter of the cost or half the cost or whatever the right number is? Is it possible? Like, if you think about how many people are creating apps now because suddenly they have access to development resources via vibe coding that they just couldn't use before. I'm literally working with an organization that's a stand up, and we're building it now. They're literally building their website rapid development, and they're doing it lightning fast. And they couldn't have done this in the past, like even 3 years ago, without a $100,000, $150,000 budget, the complexity involved.
Yeah.
And they're going to get it done for $10,000.
That's really good advice. Like all those projects you want to do, but like the cost was just too high is a lot now is in reach, and you should open up your thinking process to prioritize that.
It just takes one win, right? Like, one thing that was impossible, it suddenly becomes possible. Wow.
Yeah.
Again, just using a personal example, that book, I did that in 3 months. I went from zero to
Yeah,
60,
amazing.
right?
Yeah,
I could
amazing.
never have done that 18-month process.
Yeah, I wrote my book before AI. I wish AI would have been around because it took me 2 years.
Yes, exactly,
Like,
right?
and I would have happily been able to like do it with AI, and I would have still had the shared the same content I wanted to share, but it would have been better and easier to get into the market with.
And it's another author. Like, how many times were you sitting on the publisher to go through the edits for 3 weeks? Or, oh, now we got to wait for the galley copies, and on and on and on and on. Like, there are all these crazy delays. And I basically worked every day for 3 straight months before I got it off to a physical designer. And then that was that. You know what I mean? Like, that was it. I was able to do it because the workflow was so much it was so much more streamlined.
Another, like, this is a little off topic, but another thing is, like, today you can just talk, and, like, instead of, like, thinking, writing, rewriting, man, you could just talk for an hour or 4 hours or hour sessions, half hour sessions on the topic you're an expert on. Then the AI can transform it into whatever style guide, transform it into content. It's, like, amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
It's really
amazing.
awesome.
So what question didn't I ask you, Jeff, that that you wish I would have asked?
Well, I'm going to reverse that on you. What's the one thing that you think that companies should do to really kind of turbocharge AI and go beyond just operationalizing it? Because I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on that. And the reason why is because I know you're in it. You know what I mean? I
Yeah,
want to hear.
we are in it. Like, we're like, one of our core strategies is to be like one, world leader in AI go to market. And so really look at, so for us, it's always about growth, 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 and
Yeah.
innovation. So, like, we're always thinking about innovation and growth, which is so damn hard to do both.
Yeah.
And even though we've been doing it for 37 years, so I don't know if this is advice for everyone, but yeah, we're really focused on AI and everything to help drive front of funnel, middle funnel, close more deals, get higher value deals. So basically, we're trying to do all of our go-to-market motion, sales, marketing, all of that. We're connecting all that and just to help us for growth. And then we do a lot of the other things you talked about. Like, we've built so many internal apps. Like, we have a lot of developers because we're a tech company building software, but we have, like, product managers now that are so fast because they understand the business context and what they want, versus having to have a lot of meetings with our designers and our dev team to explain it and iterate so they can understand the need. And they're internally able to build some crazy apps that are, like, analyzing all of our call data with our sales team and our case study data and just able to get a lot of good insight on customer need. And but my advice is, it all depends how much what assets you have. If you have the money and the team, it's really what you talked about. The first thing to do is really build a sound data model architecture with AI. That means the sound data model with context, so you can keep feeding in context and skills, and give your people a way of iterating quickly on that, so your team can build that. But if your team can iterate on that quickly, like, they understand nuances in new information, nuances in style and skills and decision making, and so give them that ability to keep adding to the metadata, adding to the context. But that data layer is pulling from all your systems, and then you can find out a competitive advantage of uniquely what you have in terms of data, customer insight, decision making, and it's a real competitive advantage you'll have, and you'll automate it through the AI. Like, so it doesn't go away, because, like, I've been running my company for 37 years, and I can tell you, we didn't have skill, we built skill, some of our skill atrophies, we got to build up skill. It's like, it's an organic organism when you have people running your, which we all do, and but the AI can get pretty consistent, but that will require, like, a bigger investment. But the simpler advice is, like, yeah, you need to use AI in everything you do to improve things. And but over time, we're all going to start worrying about token costs, which we're already starting to worry now. It's starting to get expensive. So know that as well. Like, we were expensing everything on T&E. Yeah, go try this. So we have all these people trying different tools, and then started getting too expensive. So then you really got to start sharing knowledge and how to do things, instead of, like, the first goal was everyone just use AI, I don't care what it costs. Now it's more like, it's
Let's be
costing a lot of
mindful.
money, let's get some consistency and shared knowledge and what works and what's effective.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's a big issue with the tokens, and they definitely, they've structured it well to make money, but it'll be interesting to see whether they can keep going with that.
They're going up. I mean, they're going up. They have to, and they're all going to go public. They all have to be profitable. They've been subsidizing it 10x for too long, and it's already starting to happen, you know?
Yeah, although it's interesting, and not to knock Grok, but SpaceX is already starting to decline because people are like, okay, well, where's the money, right? So it's a race to monetize. Yeah, the last 3 days, it's lost money, so...
Yeah, that'll be a roller coaster. I like to bet on Elon and SpaceX, but if you were Ford Motor Company, how envious are you at like Tesla 2000 trading 2000 above like your top line, and then Ford's in single digits, but like that's like found money to go make your vision happen, because when you have that much capital, then you can buy the talent.
You can do where you want, right? You can
buy the talent and buy the companies that have the talent to reach your vision.
It's no coincidence that Ford is now looked at as an AI company and their valuation's starting to go up, right? I mean, look at the whole Allbirds thing. Like, that was crazy. They renamed themselves, they closed their business, and just became an AI company, and now they're worth 10x more.
Who did that? Allbirds?
Allbirds, the shoe company. They sold their shoe business and just said, we're an AI company.
And what do they do now? What do they?
I have no idea. Nobody knows.
Yeah, crazy.
Crazy.
Well, Jeff, so how do people get in touch with you? How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's the best way, or generativebuzz.ai. And that's just the best way to get me. Either way, you'll find me. And I definitely love chatting with people. So reach out, please.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the program and talking practical from experience, which is people really need to hear that and get that insight to help them on their journey. So thank you very much.
Oh, no, Dean, I could do this with you any day. I think you and I have we had a good coffee chat. I'm up for more. So
awesome. Thank you.
Very cool. Cheers.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.